The following is a paid program on AM 1220 KLBB. The views expressed do not necessarily represent the views of the station owner or management or Endurance Broadcasting, LLC.
Well, hold your paper zip high and forget all your worries. Where trouble always can't die.
Good morning and welcome to Voices in the Valley, where celebrate the creative spirit and nurture the art of storytelling. My name's Steph, and I am here with my BFF and co-host, Dee.
That's me. Good morning.
Good morning. Dee, you had your coffee today?
I did. Not yet. So tired.
Oh, you didn't. Oh, no. So we're going to have a specially interesting show today.
Yes, please.
Just so that Dina doesn't fall asleep. So, Fortunately, we're going to have a fantastic guest.
That's what I figured.
Yes,
so we'll be good.
And he's going to be playing the saxophone, so that will definitely wake you up later.
Works for me.
You should fall asleep, but you're not going to.
No, I'm not.
We are halfway through the NEA's Big Read presented by ArtReach St. Croix. ArtReach St. Croix received a grant to host the NEA Big Read, which is a program of the National Endowment for the Arts in partnership with Arts Midwest. And this year's programming focuses on themes related to the noir classic, The Maltese Falcon by Dashiell Hammett. We have as our guest Larry Newman from the St. Croix Jazz Orchestra. The St. Croix Jazz Orchestra is a big band made up of professional musicians who live or work in the St. Croix Valley. Larry, welcome to Voices in the Valley.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It's good to be here.
Tell me a little bit about the Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour and about your role in that as the band leader of the St. Croix Jazz Orchestra.
We will be having a scaled-down version of the full big band orchestra. It'll be a six-piece group with a vocalist, Miss Debbie O'Keefe, and so she'll be singing tunes of the era. So it's all the tunes that you've heard before but never knew where they came from the 20s and 30s. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, did you know these songs before?
Most of them would be considered jazz standards.
Okay.
I was very surprised and very pleased to see them all on the list.
So list some of the titles.
Well, we've got Body and Soul.
Oh.
That would have been something they heard in San Francisco during the Maltese Falcon.
Can you play Body and Soul?
Just
a few notes of it.
Well, okay, here we go.
He's got his sax, his golden sax. Play another. That was awesome.
Excellent.
What's another song of the era?
Oh, man, there's so many of them. Okay. Have you ever heard of a tune called What Is This Thing Called Love?
Ooh, I like it.
Oh, all the songs from that era had feelings of relationships. They were talking about, I'm falling in love. I've fallen out of love. What am I going to do with the love I've got? I wish I was falling in love. You know, it could almost be the country western of the era.
Yeah.
It could, because they talk about everything except the pickup truck. So anyhow, here is What Is This Thing Called Love. This is just a little bit of this one.
Love it.
Nice.
A lot of great melodies. And that's what it was all about. It was about the words and the melody.
So tell me what this Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour is going to be like. So we're going to go to the Caves of Hudson.
We are going to go to the caves, open the door, go in.
That's always a good first step.
That's always a big first step, especially.
It's amazing how many people forget that first step
right,
sometimes.
Getting into the caves. And then it'll be set up as a kind of a happy hour cocktail hour. You'll be able to buy cocktails of the era.
Fun.
And there'll be munchies and all that sort of stuff supplied. And we will be playing a little bit.
The Totally Criminal Cocktail Party brings 30s era jazz club in a Prohibition era cave. Details, April 27th, 2017. That's this year, in case you were curious. From 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. One last song, Larry, to guide us out of this segment of the show.
Why don't we end with You're My Everything?
Oh, I like it. Hey, It's time for our mid-program highlight in the spirit of the Big Read. The Shires Middle School audio drama team has created an original radio play as a part of their podcast, Shush, called Don't Whine Over Missing Robots. This weekly series features the adventures of Detective Samantha Shovel and her friends. Today, Episode 3.
We need a fix. My mistress, part investigator Samantha Shovel, has been double-crossed by the greedy Alexander Axton and misguided by Ruby Ratchet. The perfectly nefarious crew has kidnapped Roman, a human-robot hybrid who contains the only code that can save all the rest of the human-robot hybrids from a deadly virus. If only they can understand rearching. Oh, that glorious language of dog speak. I could tell them all that I heard Alexander and Ruby plotting the terrible plan to send us on a false trail to the dangerous, dreaded, deadly lava mite where electromagnetic storms rage and magma monsters roar and kill. But no. Instead, we're about to begin a wild goose chase that leads to nothing but our death.
Shush, child, you're not helping the situation.
Must keep looking, mud. Yeah, I want a cheeseburger.
Take it easy, Hobot. Here, I'll take Trow out of my backpack and give you a piggyback instead. Take it back here. Roman's not just going to be outside of the Big Cheese Bistro. What's wrong?
My dialect's getting on my last nerve.
Found it. Fluid leaks. Really? Where? Great, let's go. Great job, Trow. We'll find Roman in no time. Peter, keep up.
It's been like 3 hours. Can we take a rest?
Hobot, where are we?
GPS locator active. Location, middle of nowhere.
We're almost there, guys. We should see Roman soon.
Oh, no. Look at the sky, rolling steel gray clouds. It looks like a storm.
Don't worry, Peter. We'll be fine. Hobot, what can you tell us about the electrical magnetic clouds?
Electrical magnetic clouds are like a magnet. When they form, metal and lava make waves of red. Burning toxic metal rocks spike up. Anything metal will be lifted off the ground. Oh, Hobot made of metal.
It's okay, Hobot. We'll protect you.
Are we there yet?
This is the 400th time you've asked that, but this time the answer may actually be yes.
Look, it's the lava mite. Whoa, wow, it's like a heaving red ocean of molten rock.
Oh, wait, I just realized. Does that mean we're near the magmas?
An ocean of lava's worth.
Magmas. Mindless territory of beings that eat anything flesh or metal.
That's comforting.
It's so hot.
Way to speak the abyss, but... is that a magma?
Actually, I think I see one of the magmas. You don't have to be scared. You know, if we just stay away from it... Whoa!
The magmas are throwing fireballs! That just missed me by hair!
Seriously, my phone?
We have to run!
It's Frank Foreman calling. Hello, Frank. What's up? I'm sort of busy right now running for my life.
Crap, you're there. You have to come back.
What?
You've been set up! I said you have to come back!
Alert! Magmas!
Frank, the magmas are starting to surround us. We need to get out!
But Sam, I've got really important information to tell you!
This isn't good. This is really not good. I knew we shouldn't have come. Singed whiskers? How annoying.
Samantha, there's so many. How do we get away?
I almost got hit! Frank, can you hold on a minute?
Yeah. Sure.
Chance of survival, 99.9%.
Well, at least that's reassuring.
Recalculating accurately for Peter, chance of survival, 0.1%.
No.
So you see, I had this inspiration that if I didn't know what was up with Ruby, I could just go into her Kmail account and find out.
Okay, that's creepy. Duck!
Flashback. Flashback. Flashback.
Oh no, we're flashbacking on Frank's mind? Not now. Not when we're surrounded by magmas!
Rube's password. Rasmanats, Rube's lot 12-3. There. Okay, Rube's. What have you got here? Rose's department store coupon, credit card advertisement, toilet paper. Oh, here's a personal email. It's to Alexander Axton. What the heck? She's not trying to undermine me, is she? My ex-fiancé trying to destroy my career?
Frank. Frank, we're under fire here. Frank, get to the points!
Flashback.
Calm down, Frank, calm down. It's probably just an ad for a new line of hybrids. I'll just read it to make sure. I can hear Ruby's voice now.
Subject the plan, Alexander, my love.
Seriously, how rude.
Plan number one is a success. Sam and the bunch have followed our fake trail that leads to the lava mite. How clever to hide Roman in your closet. I love how you say,
they'll be dead before you can say filthy rich.
I love your plan number two. My father will be vindicated. Let's get started.
Peter, duck! We have to go back. We can't just let the magma catch us. There's so much more at stake than just our own lives.
Please don't let us burn up. I won't see a teaspoon more catnip or even drink milk from the carton.
I don't know what to do. They've surrounded us.
You put your left foot in. You put your right foot out.
Hobot, are you okay?
Probably trying to keep the morales up.
Morales. Noun. The kindness and basic amount of soccer balls riding a horse in Kentucky. You put your left hand on your shoulder and spin into a split.
It's just another glitch.
You do the hokey pokey. Do the hokey pokey.
Wait. I think the magmas are following along.
Then put your left in and turn your head around.
It's working. They're not attacking.
Everyone, do the hokey pokey.
I am not doing the hokey pokey.
Do the hokey pokey. Do the hokey pokey.
Do the hokey pokey.
That's what it's all about.
Run, everyone, run.
Chance of survival, 10.01%.
At least it's an improvement.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Is that
the electromagnetic storm?
Run! Go as far as your paws can take you!
We've got to run! The storm is getting worse!
Elephant does not compute disrupt cat dogs and see where swim into the ow storm and fly at her.
Hobot's rising up! We have to pull him out of the magnetic net!
Pull him! Pull!
The what?
The space around and under the storm that pulls in metal!
How are we supposed to do that? We can barely keep him off the ground with all three of us.
I don't mean to make matters worse, but the magmas are coming at us again.
We need to get out of here.
We are not leaving Hobot.
It looks like we might not have to. Look up.
I hate heights. Why did it have to be a helicopter that we get saved in?
It's Frank Foreman.
Ruby's ex and owner of Foreman Inc. is here.
Took you long enough.
Danger. Danger! The 20% coupon at Rose Department Store will end in 3 minutes.
Hurry into the helicopter. We have to find Roman before they take him out of the country and dip him in acid.
Let's go. We need to get there first.
Then get in the chopper. We have no time to lose.
Can we really lose time? Or does it stay with you forever, like a memory?
Good time to get smart. Really great timing.
Hurry before my electrical magnetic storm shield gives out.
Come on, let's go! The fate of all human-robot hybrids is depending on us!
Life was simpler back in the day. The pace was slower, and the food more genuine somehow. It's still that way at Wayback Burgers. We use only fresh, authentic ingredients. Our delicious, juicy burgers are made to order and cooked to perfection. And our thick, creamy milkshakes are hand-dipped with real ice cream, the old-fashioned way. With Wayback's relaxing atmosphere and great food, things are as they were, only better. Taste freshness, America. Wayback Burgers.
My dad says I'm his pride and joy.
My mommy says I was her big surprise.
My mom says I'm her best helper.
I'm adopted. My dad says I was a gift.
That's right, kids. Each of you are a miracle and a blessing from God. Hello, my name is Angie. I work with Pro-Life Across America, the Billboard people. If you know someone who is pregnant and in need of confidential counseling, including alternatives to abortion or post-abortion assistance, please call Pro-Life Across America at 1-800-366-7773 or check us out online at prolifeacrossamerica.org. Pro-Life Across America is educational, non-political, and tax-deductible. Please help support our life-saving outreach.
A baby child is being 18 days from conception.
Pro-Life Across America, the Billboard people.
We've been family-owned since 1922, and we still believe that it all starts with you.
Find your bonus tag at Stillwater Motors. Hurry in and save up to $11,000 on new 2017 Chevy 1500 Silverado Crew Cabs. Find new roads with your next vehicle from Stillwater Motors. Redunds family owned since 1922. Call 651-HEY-CHEV or go to stillwatermotors.com.
Stillwater Motors, good people to know.
This is Steph here on Voices in the Valley, and in honor of the NEA Big Read presented by ArtReach St. Croix and ArtReach's programming partners. During the month of April, we are dedicating the second half of our show to the Maltese Falcons audio guide produced by the National Endowment for the Arts. If you are just tuning in, the NEA Big Read in the St. Croix Valley is a one-book, one-community experience that brings together residents from throughout the St. Croix Valley around the Maltese Falcon by Dashiell Hammett. Here is part three of the NEA Big Read podcast. If you have missed parts one and two, never fear. You can find it online at voicesinthevalley.us.
Joe Gores discusses a memorable scene in which Spade searches Bridget's apartment looking for the black bird. Although he becomes romantically involved with his client, Spade refuses to let love get in the way of doing his job thoroughly and professionally. Joe Gores.
Everybody puzzled over the fact, why did Spade sit down and have a cup of coffee in Bridget's apartment after he had searched it? Why would he do that? It's a vicious thing to do, blah, 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 blah. I said, no. He was establishing dominance. When I was a repo man, if a guy ever left his lunch in his car, I ate it. I ate your lunch, buddy. You know, that's the thing. And that's what he was doing. He was literally eating Bridget's lunch. He was establishing control.
You're listening to The Big Read from the National Endowment for the Arts. Today, we're discussing The Maltese Falcon by Dashiell Hammett. Dashiell Hammett's hard-boiled hero, Sam Spade, comes from a long line of fictional detectives, though none of Spade's predecessors were anything like him. Crime writer Adrian McKinty.
If you look at the English detectives, Conan Doyle, you've got Sherlock Holmes, and you've got Miss Marple. This is the 1920s. Dorothy L. Sayers characters and Agatha Christie characters, and they're gentlemen detectives or amateur detectives. Sam Spade is completely different from those guys. He's hard-bitten, he's hard-nosed, he's brutal, he's cynical.
Hammett is often compared to two other great detective authors, Raymond Chandler and Ross MacDonald. Former private eye, Joe Gores.
Chandler saw the private detective as a knight. Down these mean streets, a man must go who is not himself mean. Ross MacDonald saw him as a social worker. He's always trying to figure out how to help somebody. The Hammett hero is a guy who does his job, and he follows his own rules of conduct.
Adrian McKinty.
I really like the way Spade takes command of every single conversation that he's in. The police may be accusing him of murder. They may be accusing him of double murder. He may have a gun pointed at him. He may be about to be clobbered on the head by a hood. And yet, Spade is in command of the conversation.
In the opening pages, Miles Archer and the mysterious Thursby are shot dead. The police suspect Spade might be the killer. He's eventually called into the district attorney's office for an informal talk.
Who killed Thursby? Spade said, I don't know. Bryan rubbed his black eyeglass ribbon between thumb and fingers and said knowingly, perhaps you don't, but you certainly could make an excellent guess. Maybe, but I wouldn't. The district attorney raised his eyebrows. I wouldn't, Spade repeated. He was serene. My guess might be excellent, or it might be crummy, but Mrs. Spade didn't raise any children dippy enough to make guesses in front of a district attorney, an assistant district attorney, and a stenographer. Why shouldn't you, if you've nothing to conceal? Everybody, Spade responded mildly, has something to conceal. Spade's lifted lip showed his eye tooth. I thought this was an informal talk. My clients are entitled to a decent amount of secrecy. Maybe I can be made to talk to a grand jury, or even a coroner's jury, but I haven't been called before either yet, and it's a cinch. I'm not going to advertise my client's business until I have to. Then again, you and the police have both accused me of being mixed up in the other night's murders. I've had trouble with both of you before. As far as I can see, my best chance of clearing myself of the trouble you're trying to make for me is by bringing in the murderers all tied up. And my only chance of ever catching them and tying them up and bringing them in is by keeping away from you and the police because neither of you show any signs of knowing what in hell it's all about. He rose and turned his head over his shoulder to address the stenographer. Getting this all right, son? Or am I going too fast for you? The stenographer looked at him with startled eyes and replied, No, sir, I'm getting it all right. Good work, Spade said and turned to Brian again. Now, if you want to go to the board and tell them I'm obstructing justice and ask them to revoke my license, hop to it. You've tried it before and didn't get you anything but a good laugh all around. He picked up his hat. Brian began. But look here, Spade said, and I don't want any more of these informal talks. I've got nothing to tell you or the police, and I'm goddamn tired of being called things by every crackpot on the city payroll. If you want to see me, pinch me or subpoena me or something, and I'll come down with my lawyer. He put his hat in his head and said, See you at the inquest, maybe, and stalked out.
Critics disagree whether Hammett or Hemingway first developed the crisp, understated style that's associated with their writing. Though no one knows the answer, one thing's for sure. The Maltese Falcon is quintessential hard-boiled fiction. Julie Rivette.
Hard-boiled fiction has at its heart a tough guy, a protagonist who's making his way through a dark world.
It's like diamonds. His work doesn't shatter. Things glance off it. It's hard.
The defining attribute of hard-boiled is cynicism.
This is tough, punchy, terse prose.
There's no floweriness.
I like to say it's like a 7-minute egg.
You crack them, but they don't fall apart. And I suppose that's a characteristic of Hammett's heroes.
Hardboiled only really works in America.
Adrian McKinty.
You know, America is a diverse, new, bursting, violent, dark, beautiful country. When you've got the collision of all those forces coming together, especially newness. Newness brings the rich to the bottom and it elevates the poor to the very top. You can be a self-made success or a self-made failure in America. Americans think about the future, whereas in Europe they think about the past all the time. Hard-boiled is a stance that looks towards tomorrow with a slightly optimistic but also slightly weary, cynical eye.
The Maltese Falcon is interrupted by a brief story within a story. It's the tale of a case Spade once worked on when he was searching for a missing man named Flitcraft. David Kippen.
Spade tells what's come to be called the Flitcraft parable to Bridget O'Shaughnessy. It's the story of a guy who basically drops out of his life, and nobody knows quite why until Spade bumps into him years later and gets the story.
Maureen Corrigan.
He said he was walking down the sidewalk one day and a beam fell from a construction site and almost hit him and killed him.
Doesn't hurt him except maybe a chip in the concrete bounces up and nicks his cheek. That's the only visible scar. But of course, the invisible scar is that he's been, well, in Hammett's phrase, he felt like somebody had taken the lid off life and let him look at the works.
And that's when Flitcraft realized he needed to change his life, deserted his wife and children.
Julie Rivette.
He suddenly realized that life was not orderly and planned the way that he'd thought that it was. So he decided to align himself with that new worldview, and he took off and changed his life at random.
He went to Seattle that afternoon, Spade said, and from there by boat to San Francisco. For a couple of years, he wandered around and then drifted back to the Northwest and settled in Spokane and got married. His second wife didn't look like the first, but they were more alike than they were different. You know, kind of women that play fair games of golf and bridge and like new salad recipes. He wasn't sorry for what he had done. It seemed reasonable enough to him. I don't think he even knew he'd settled back naturally into the same groove he'd jumped out of in Tacoma. But that's the part of it I always liked. He adjusted himself to beams falling, and then no more of them fell. And he adjusted himself to them not falling.
Walter Mosley.
The story within a story is the heart of the novel. The dream he's chasing is also the life that he once led. And I think that that story gives Spade his understanding of the world.
The Maltese Falcon was a terrific success.
David Kippen.
This was the book that pretty much did what I think Hammett all along intended for it to do, which was to elevate the detective story to the realm of literature.
Matthew Bruckley.
It's a world classic that has entered the knowledge of every literate person in the English-speaking world and most of the others. Enormously, prodigiously influential book.
Although The Maltese Falcon was adapted for the screen three times, it was the last version in 1941 that became a classic. It also launched three famous film careers. Leading man Humphrey Bogart had his breakthrough role. The corpulent stage actor Sidney Greenstreet announced his presence on the silver screen. And John Huston made his directorial debut. David Kippen.
You would be hard-put to point to another American literary classic that resulted in a movie of such great distinction as The Maltese Falcon. It's a terrific adaptation, which on the one hand is very faithful. I mean, the joke about it for years was that Huston tossed a copy of the paper back to his secretary and said, change the margins on this over the weekend because we want to start shooting on Monday. Well, of course, that is absurd. It also, many have said, more or less invented film noir, the idea of dark, sordid, frequently crime-driven American stories in black and white.
Hammett published all five of his novels within the span of only 5 years. Once he reached 40, he never published another serious work, even though he lived to be 66. The chronic illnesses that had plagued Hammett for most of his life finally killed him in 1961. Toward the end of the novel, the criminals who have been tirelessly searching for the Maltese Falcon finally have the bird within their grasp. Walter Mosley.
It's the dingus. There's always a dingus. There's something that we're looking for, the something or someone that's lost. And this one, it's the Maltese Falcon, it's the dingus. And the wonderful thing is that's what Sam Spade calls it. He says, so we got the dingus here. Everybody's talking about how it's worth all of this money, but he just sees it as the thing that's holding this caper together, basically. It stands for all the dreams of all the characters except for Sam Spade.
Thanks for joining The Big Read. This program was created by the National Endowment for the Arts in partnership with the Institute of Museum and Library Services. It was written and produced by Dan Stone. Readings from The Maltese Falcon were by Scott Simon. Honey, performed by Jay McShann, used with permission of Chiaroscuro Records. Also from Chiaroscuro Records are Milt Hinton's Time After Time and Time on My Hands, as well as It Don't Mean a Thing and Slap Happy, featuring Lionel Hampton. John Barry's main titles from the film Hammett, courtesy of Len Friedman Music. Instrumental selections from the original score to the film Brick by Nathan Johnson and the Cinematic Underground, used with permission of Nathan Johnson and Chop Logic Music. Thanks to Pop Sound, Santa Monica, California, for the sound effects. Special thanks to Matt Fitzhenry, Carolyn O'Keefe, Pepper Smith, Ken Huffman, Erica Koss, Adam Campy, and to our contributors, Matthew Bruckley, Maureen Corrigan, Joe Gores, Diane Johnson, David Kippen, Adrian McKinty, Walter Mosley, and Julie Rivette. For the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm Dana Gioia.
For more information about The Big Read,
go to www.neabigread.org. That's www.neabigread.org.
The NEA Big Read audio guides are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. NEA Big Read is a program of the National Endowment for the Arts in partnership with Arts Midwest.